Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, September 14th, 2020. I'm joined by Alex Brown. Alex, how are things this week?
Very good. On the day we're recording, which is the previous Thursday, it's a gorgeous sunny day in Cornwall.
Excellent. Yeah, the weather's been really nice, kind of late summer weather here as well. And I heard from friends in the United States and actually from some of our colleagues in the main office that the Labor Day weekend weather was fantastic last week. So yeah, everything's good weather-wise. And we've got, for better or for worse, I know a lot of our listeners have not been outside in the sun because they've been working on applications. So do you want to talk a little bit about deadlines? Because we're now, it's on us. Round one for MBA admissions, we're in full swing.
Yeah, I mean, I neglected to mention it last week, but, since our last Wiretaps episode, obviously Harvard wanted, many would argue the biggest sort of program on the block, had its first round deadline, as well as some European schools. Darden's also had its early action deadline. And this upcoming week, Graham, we have some real big players have their round one deadlines, not the least of which is Stanford. Stanford is up this week. Yale, Ross are up this week, as well as Kellogg. We're definitely rolling right into the thick of round one application deadlines. So I just want to wish everybody listening that's targeting round one the best of luck as they get, fine-tune their applications and get a little nervous and hit that submit button.
Yeah. And I will say, there's a lot of resources on our site to help you as you, get things together. There's a number of admissions tips about the application data forms that you're likely filling out. We also have a really good admissions tip that's rotating up on the site now and that you can find anyway, which is about optional essays, which many of you, you get to the end of the process and you think, oh, should I write that optional essay? So definitely use the resources at clearadmit.com if you need them as you submit. And I guess we've got, from here till the end of the month, pretty much, Alex, we're going to see a lot of deadlines, right? I mean, we've got, I presume, some of the other big guns are coming.
Into October, Graham. I mean, Sloan is notorious for a top school having a late deadline relative to its peers, and I don't remember exactly when Sloan's round one deadline is, but I do remember noting that yet again it is late. We're going to be looking at it all for a good while. In fact, I can look at Sloan right now. Yeah, October 1st.
There you go, and they're at the end,
just slightly into October. But Stern comes later than that. Cornell comes later than that. So over the next several weeks, we'll have plenty of round one deadline.
Good. So it's actually a perfect segue because Wednesday of this week, September 16th at noon Eastern, we're doing another essay workshop. And I'm going to MC it. And I'm sitting down with admissions officers from MIT Sloan, Chicago Booth, NYU Stern, and UT Austin. So we're going to have those four schools, and I'm going to grill them on, the essay questions they ask and why they ask them, what they're looking for when candidates go to respond. And it turns out that most of these deadlines are a bit later. So it's perfect timing for people who are kind of considering those schools. And you can sign up, which you have to sign up in advance. You just go to bit.ly/essay insight and you can sign up. I strongly recommend you do so quickly because this is, we're coming up on, it's going to be 2 days from now, right? So definitely be a lot of fun. And Alex, these schools have some crazy questions. I, just was familiarizing myself with them again for this year. And because we're doing this workshop, but I don't know if you remember this, but NYU Stern has this thing called the pick six, where you have to pick out six images or drawings that you kind of assemble into a PDF that kind of represent who you are and tell a story about your background. And Chicago Booth has no word count. I mean, they have a minimum word count, but no maximum on their essay questions. And, MIT Sloan has a cover letter that you have to write. So each of these schools has some nuance or, kind of thing that sort of stands out to me. And so we're going to dig deep and find out about why they've done things the way they do them.
Yeah, and I'm sure you'll have a great time with that, Graham. I know the last essay workshop that you all ran was very successful. So best of luck, yeah, and hopefully folks listening are able to join.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so let's move on. I did want to mention one more thing, and that's that I guess my call for reviews and ratings was heard by at least one person. So somebody named, their kind of username is Number Digits, left us a review in which they called the podcast the best MBA resource on earth. And they mentioned they've listened to every episode of Clear Admits podcast. And it says, "I can say by far, this is the best resource in the world for potential MBA candidates. I'm a senior and undergrad at Kelly and have learned so much about the types of experiences that are seen as impactful and how I can stay true to myself while building a competitive application." So thanks so much for that review. That's actually a great segue into Wiretaps today, because I know one of the people that we're going to talk about on Wiretaps is, you know, kind of looking at like early access MBA programs. And so, you know, probably it's a younger person, much like this listener. So that'll be interesting to dig into. But before we kind of get started, is there anything else that you wanted to tackle on this week before we get into the wiretaps?
No, I mean, I just say I was actually watching an old video recording of Jeff Bezos from 2016. And he was talking about his blue, was it Blue Oyster or whatever his spaceship rocket program is.
And, I can't remember, blue something. Yeah.
If Jeff Bezos has anything to do with it, we should be the best MBA resource in the universe, not just on the
Earth. That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point. Well, so, someone will, someone will write that review.
We got to try a little harder anyway.
But excellent.
Anyway, joking aside, we truly appreciate the feedback. We're passionate about doing this stuff, and it's always great to hear folks that sort of recognize that passion.
Yeah, agreed. So thanks for the review and keep them coming, folks. So let's move along. Let's get into Wiretaps candidate number one. So this person is applying to 6 schools. They want to start in the fall of 2021. And the schools on their list are Columbia, Harvard, LBS, MIT Sloan, Stanford, and Wharton. This person, their pre-MBA career is a PhD in neuroscience at MIT. And they are looking to get into pharma or maybe entrepreneurship after business school. And their companies that they've listed as potential targets are Merck, Novartis, Pfizer, and Roche. Their GRE score is a whopping 337, GPA 4.0, and they have 5 years of experience. They're in Boston, obviously, because they're doing a PhD over at MIT, and they want to stay in the U.S. So it's interesting because the thing about this candidate is that they're currently a PhD student. They actually have a 5.0 out of 5 in that program, whereas the 4.0 was, I guess, their undergraduate GPA. And when they applied for the PhD program, they had to take the GRE then, and they had a 340 out of 340, but they had to retake it, I guess, recently because the scores expire for business school, and they fell down to a 337, which is still, astronomically high. So they have 5 years of research experience, and the real issue here is that they've just decided recently that they want to pivot away from research and into kind of management, maybe even be a CEO someday for biotech or pharma. But they have limited business experience. And so they're kind of curious about like, what are their chances? And, you had some back and forth with them. I think I left a comment as well. But what do you make of this candidate? Because we don't see that many PhDs, let alone in neuroscience, applying to business school.
Yeah, what I'm going to do, Graham, I think this is an absolutely fascinating case. I hadn't picked up on the fact that the person, I'm not sure the guy being gender neutral, but they're getting a bit less intelligent by slipping up on the GRE like that. But what I want to do, Graham, is actually read one of these comments from one of the community members.
Sure.
And then get your take on this particular comment. It's a little bit long, but I think it's very insightful.
Okay.
So just bear with me for a minute. And the commenter goes, "As a PhD in chemical physics," I didn't even know that was a subject, but there we go. "As a PhD in chemical physics and a Columbia MBA, schools definitely like the different perspective. Don't discount the leadership teamwork skills you get in the lab. 4 to 5 years of working 9+ hours counts as work, even if people don't quite get it. You will have to frame it for them. Plus, in the lab, leadership experience is not always framed as such, but managing undergrads, training new people to join the team, and other work you do in the department that is often framed as such. What you have to do in order to graduate as strong, are strong leadership areas. Sorry, I'm kind of jumbling it up a little bit. I mean to take some knowledge, building upon it to generate an idea, working to discover something new and created, all while working with your team and managing other campus relationships to get a project completed for graduation in what is what business leaders do. Also, reach out to other PhD plus MBAs. I did a quick LinkedIn search during my app process. So many talked to me, gave me feedback and advice on what to highlight. It's not a common path, but there are others out there that have done it. And my comment to this person, I just thought this was terrific advice. It's like, really try to frame what you've done in the language that the admissions officers will readily understand in terms of this person's experience and their leadership and their mentorship. And as this person suggested, you're taking, you're sitting on the shoulders of others in terms of their idea generation and adding to that with your own research and so on and so forth. There's potentially some really interesting stuff here, I think. Obviously, this candidate's off the charts in one aspect of the candidacy on the academic aptitude and so on and so forth. Their challenge is to really show their management and leadership development through the process of the work that they've done in the labs at the university and so on and so forth. I don't think that's insurmountable, Graham. I think, and certainly, this is a PhD student in neuroscience. They're seeking to work in the sort of biomedical field, in terms of becoming a business leader, biotech, pharma. These are really important areas. And specifically right now with COVID-19, I mean, this is all super interesting stuff, I think.
Yeah, I agree. My view on this candidate is that they should be able to get into any number of top programs and to realize their goals. I will say that there are some pitfalls that they're going to need to avoid, because sometimes PhDs applying to business school can be typecast or can make some mistakes, like you're saying earlier. Like, they need to be able to translate their lab work and their research into, you know, kind of management speak, if you will, or just to sort of point out like the teamwork. And so it's you know, the admissions reader is going to be less impressed by the long list of publications this person may have and more impressed by their work, running a lab or being part of a lab with many moving parts and people and roles, right? So I think that's the main thing. And I also think we've mentioned this before in the podcast, but whenever you have an advanced degree and you're going to kind of go and get an MBA, you need to make sure that you don't come across as someone who's just realizing they're getting to the end of one degree and looking to kind of be a lifetime student, so, or a degree collector, as we've said before. So I think that's another thing, is there has to be a really clear vision here. And I think this person has it. I mean, they basically were on this path to teach or do research and work with their PhD when they realized that, you know what, they want to be a leader in the kind of business side of healthcare and biotech. And so there's a really rational storyline here. They just need to convey it. And I feel like, yeah, sky's the limit. I mean, the numbers are off the charts, and I don't know where they went to undergrad, but, you know, a PhD in neuroscience at MIT with a perfect GPA is nothing to scoff at. So there's no issue academically. I think it's all going to come down to, yeah, just telling the story in a way that showcases their aptitude to be a business leader. Because, you know, there are a lot of like sort of brainiacs who are, you know, PhDs who maybe wouldn't make for great business leaders, and vice versa, obviously, right? So, but I think they just need to show that they have some of that communication skill to make that leap, right? So, but I think sky's the limit here.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of their target schools, I wonder if Kellogg should be on the list too, Graham. I mean, obviously we're talking sort of healthcare sort of focus, healthcare slash entrepreneurship. So they've got Wharton in there, obviously Harvard and Stanford are in there. I mean, they got to aim very high, I think.
Yeah.
And to me, Kellogg fits in there. There was another comment by another member of the community, which I thought was interesting too, is, and obviously we're very pro going to get the MBA, so I don't want to distract this person from pursuing that. But their suggestion was to actually, had they looked into recruiting directly into a pharma company or into, you know, the McKinsey, Bain, BCG domain, because those top consulting firms do hire PhDs. And this is, again, a very interesting area right now in terms of pharma and biomed and so on and so forth. So there, I mean, my point being, there are a couple of different pathways that this candidate could take to execute on their sort of longer term goal, i.e. a manager role, eventually becoming a CEO in a biotech pharma, in the biotech pharma industry.
Yeah, agree. And I think that is an interesting point. We know McKinsey in particular loves PhDs. And so, yeah, they could potentially go out and get that job that they're looking for and use that as to a way to pivot into the workforce. But I personally, they have a lot of options.
And vice versa, they go get the MBA, McKinsey and the top consulting companies will be very interested in them because they also have that PhD background and that sort of rigorous scientific background married to the MBA. Maybe a couple of years at a top elite consulting firm to then put them into the industry directly might be another way to look at it.
Absolutely. So anyway, great feedback. Interesting candidate. Best of luck to this person as they proceed. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this person is applying or has 9 schools on their target list, and they're thinking of an intake year of 2023 because this person is, as I kind of alluded to earlier, a kind of early access person. They want to apply now, but have a couple of years before they need to start. And the schools they're looking at are Columbia, HBS, the Indian School of Business, Kellogg, Stanford, Chicago, Wharton, Darden, and Yale. And this person's been working, well, they're in school, but I guess their pre-MBA kind of work experience, they're talking about it being in marketing and digital marketing. So I'm guessing that they may, this might be where they're headed when they graduate. It's unclear because they didn't give us all the details. But after business school, they want to be involved in something entrepreneurial or maybe nonprofit slash social impact. GMAT score is 740. And GPA is 8.0, and that's in India because this person is located in India. And so an 8.0 is a really high score on the Indian scale, which is, it's out of 100, but you rarely see people with much north of 80. So that's a solid GPA. And they indicate in their note, they mention thanks for the podcast, and they mention that we're their go-to source for MBA information. But they also share that they're applying for the deferred MBA during this season. And they indicated that we haven't talked much on the podcast about these types of programs. I know we did a special episode, but we haven't done many wiretaps like featuring candidates, you know, who are looking at these. So they just are curious, like, what do we think of their candidacy and how does one position themselves well for these early access programs?
Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting case, Graham. I mean, they're all interesting cases, obviously, this being different. So this is an undergrad. They're looking to apply to an MBA program or apply to several MBA programs, get hopefully an admissions to at least one or several of them, and then go to work for 2 or 3 years and then attend the MBA program, just to make it clear to our listeners exactly what this sort of deferral type process means. So, I mean, this is very interesting. So what I would say to a candidate like this is it, basically what it does is it gives you two shots in terms of applying to the MBA. You apply now, roll the dice, see if you can get admission. If you're not successful, then go do the work 2 to 3 or 4 years, and then reapply. And what I would say to candidates, if you have to go through that process of reapplying, there's no stigma attached to the fact that you already applied 3 years ago or 4 years ago and weren't successful as an undergrad. So I would say, go into this full on, do it, and don't fear the fact that if you're not successful, your MBA ambitions are doomed. That is not the case. So let's just get that out of the way from the get-go. Now, that said, I think there are some unique challenges to someone that is currently an undergrad that's looking to apply to these types of programs. And quite frankly, the biggest challenge is you don't have that professional work experience, which becomes a big platform for traditional candidates to express a lot of the qualities that MBA admissions officers are trying to understand and to seek. So if you don't have that, then it means other aspects of your candidacy are going to be more scrutinized and have a higher bar, as it were, to sort of overcome, if that makes any sense. So your academic record is going to have to be very good. And as Graham pointed out, that seems to be the case for this candidate. The GMAT score is going to have to be very good, and it's a 740 GMAT. And I know that this candidate's probably from an overrepresented population, but a 740 is a 740 is a good GMAT score. So I think on the academic side, Graham, I think they check the boxes. Now, the candidate needs to be active as an undergrad in outside of sort of academic activities, right? They need to be a leader on campus, because that's one way to showcase the attributes that they're not able to showcase in their professional career to date. So, you know, top schools looking at these deferred candidates are going to be looking at how active were you as an undergrad, what sort of leadership roles did you take? They're also looking to see, you know, how active you're going to be on their campuses, in several years' time, right? So that's going to make sense. So however active this person is, that's going to be very important. If they've got another year to go in their undergrad, then hopefully they're showing their sort of leadership and so on and so forth, and have they have an opportunity to continue to do that. So that will be important. They're also going to look at your internships. What internship opportunities have you sought out, and how successful were they, right? Making sure that this candidate has been doing internships and so on and so forth, and as you said, that they've talked about digital marketing and marketing. Maybe that's what they're planning to do post undergrad, or maybe that's also what they've done through their internships. Getting the internship stuff done, perhaps getting a letter of support from a supervisor through the internships, that's going to be quite important too. And then the other side of it is, do they have a plan? Have they already determined, all right, this is what I plan to do in the next 2 or 3 years, this is why I want to get an MBA, and this is what I plan to do post-MBA, and how they've thought through all that, i.e. the outcome's really going to want to know why this candidate now has decided that an MBA is going to be critical for them in 2 or 3 years' time to execute on a longer-term plan. So to the extent that they can talk intelligently about that, that's going to be very good too.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of background, just so that full disclosure, candidates know why schools are offering these sorts of deferral programs. It's to some extent to compete with other master's programs that are recruiting undergrads directly out of undergrad, right? So now MBA, top MBA programs have a bit of a skin in the game now. They can compete directly. But the other side of it is really understand, you know, seeking candidates or candidates have to display that they've got a well thought out plan and they want to execute on it. They want to know now that when they go to their first job out of undergrad, their pathway is set with the MBA in that picture. Anyway, I'm going to stop at that, Graham. I've talked a long time, and let you add your thoughts.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that, so a couple of things. Number one, from the big picture standpoint, I remember a conversation I had with the director of admissions over at Columbia about their advanced access MBA. And he mentioned at the time, this is Michael Robinson, I think we did a podcast actually, and he talked about how, you know, it's a program that's not necessarily for people who don't know what they plan to do. You know, it's sort of more for the people who, you know, kick some butt academically, know what they want to do, and have like a very clear plan kind of overachiever, type A, maybe type person, right, who kind of has it all together and knows what they want, you know, as opposed to someone who needs to do some exploration first and work for a few years and where the MBA just comes more organically later, right? So I think that's important to keep in mind if you're thinking about these programs. The other thing I was going to say is the academics really get scrutinized because, as you pointed out, it's like one of the main things they can go to where there's a lot of evidence. And in fact, where there's the same evidence that you would have for a traditional MBA. You know, you have your GPA and you have your test score. And so in this person's case, 740, great score. This person is in India. I don't know if they're male or female, but they do risk falling into an overrepresented group, which might make that 740 seem a little less exciting, but it's good. It's clearly in the ballpark for these types of programs. It's above the average of most of these schools, right? So that's solid. The GPA is also strong, but I wanted to know, like, what is this person studying and where? If this person is studying, you know, I don't know, chemical engineering at one of the IITs, that means one thing to me. If they're studying, you know, history at a local university in India, that means something else to me maybe, right? So it'd be good to know because that stuff will be looked at very carefully by the admissions team. And then the other thing I was going to say is I wanted to understand how does this pre-MBA career in marketing and digital marketing, which I don't know if that means their internships or what they're going to do right now when they graduate, but it doesn't matter. But how does that fit with their plan to do entrepreneurship and nonprofit social impact work? Because, you know, you're even though they recognize you're younger, they're looking for you to have a pretty concrete plan and one that makes sense. So I would just throw a little bit of caution in there too. This person needs to make sure they're, you know, telling a story that makes sense. And then everything else you said, I agree with. I mean, they got to point out any instances of leadership and how active they've been on campus. But yeah, these programs are increasingly popular. And I mean, as you can see, there are 9 schools on this person's list. They all offer early access or whatever they all have different names for them. I think it's advanced access at Wharton, it's Harvard, it's 2+2. They all have a different name, but effectively, with the exception of Yale, they all amount to you getting in now, working for a little bit, and then you know, getting the MBA at a you know, typically a younger age than you normally would. With Yale, you go straight in and do a year at Yale doing the core curriculum. Then you go off and do like an internship for a year or kind of a co-op almost, and then you come back for another year. So there's a little different, but all the others are like work for 2 years, maybe 3, and then come and get the MBA. Yeah. So yeah, this is interesting.
And I just lead this conversation on one final thought. The ADCOM, when they're admitting a candidate into these types of programs, they are taking a higher risk than admitting a candidate that's actually applying this year to attend the following season, because they're making a bet on who you're going to be in 3 years' time or 2 years' time or whatever it is. Again, you could argue Yale's is different in that regard, but they're making a bet into the future. So there's a little bit of a risk, which basically means there's a much higher level of scrutiny on the data points that they have.
Yeah, fair point. Yeah. So anyway, I think enough said there, but obviously we have some resources on the website for these early programs. We have a whole landing page devoted to the early programs. So take a peek at that. And we'll try, you know, obviously share your profiles on ApplyWire and we'll cover them if you're interested in that and feedback on these programs. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this person is applying to start in the fall of 2021. And she has only 2 schools on her list, but we later found out in discussion with her on the site that there are more potentially. But the 2 schools currently on the list are Harvard and Stanford. She's been working in consulting at a Big 4, as well as with her family business, which is it's actually located in Asia. It sounds like she might be in the U.S., but the business is back in Asia. It's a technology business, I believe. Post-MBA, this woman is looking to get into tech and then to go to the family business and, you know, work there long-term. Her GMAT score is 710. GPA is 3.7. She has 4 years of work experience. And in her note, she mentioned that she works for the family business, which is in the tech space, and that she wants to rejoin that business at a higher level after business school. And she wondered about her GMAT score, whether she needs to retake, or if because, you know, she's planning on going into the family business, has a very clear path, if maybe she doesn't need to retake a 710. So that's where she kind of left it. You know, she has Harvard and Stanford on the list, kind of gave us that little background. We had some back and forth with her, but what do you make of this candidate on the surface?
Yeah, on the surface, Graham, I think there's a lot of potential upside here. And, you know, obviously this sort of family business, going to the family business, it's a tech business, it's based in Asia, it's supposed to be, I think it's a fairly large business. So there's a good degree of opportunity that she could be a high impact alumni. That's kind of where I'm looking at it from my perspective is, you know, again, and we talked about this a little bit before, what are business schools looking for? They're looking for alums that have a big footprint and a high impact in the world, sort of in the long run, right? That sort of aligns with all the mission statements of all these top schools. So to the extent that she can sort of come across as a candidate like that, that has to be a very good thing. Applying only to Harvard and Stanford, and she did then further committed that she's going to apply to some other M7 schools too. But if you're only targeting Harvard and Stanford, that's going to be risky no matter what candidate you are, no doubt. Now, do these, and she has a good GPA, so that's very good, 3.7 GPA. She obviously, I mean, hopefully she has good work experience. She's already done some work in the family business, and she's worked at consulting the Big Four. So it'll be interesting in terms of her work in the family business, sort of her impact to date and so on and so forth, how that sort of has manifested. But I think there's a lot of upside here. To sort of cut a long story short, the biggest question is this 710 good enough? That's what she's really concerned with in terms of getting into an elite school like Harvard and Stanford. The answer to that is absolutely a 710 is good enough if everything else is outstanding. If you look at the GMAT ranges for Harvard and Stanford, they're going to go well below the 710. But that said, is it good enough in the context of all the other data points that she presents? And then the answer gets a little bit more murkier because, again, we don't know exactly the impact she's had at work, outside of work, impact, and so on and so forth. So I think it is actually quite a difficult question. So I'll ask you directly, Graham, because this is a question she asked us directly. Does she need to retake this GMAT?
My inclination would be yes. Now, there's a ton of information that I don't have that could help me to, you know, go back on that decision. But for now, I would say yes. And the reason I'm saying yes is because it's unclear to me how much of her work experience has been, you know, with a consulting firm in the Big Four versus the family business, which, you know, if it's been like mostly family business, then we get into this issue of like how it might be difficult to get recommendations or all that stuff might be taken with a grain of salt if this is like the CEO's daughter that's applying and someone's writing a recommendation for, right? So you get into this issue of like you need data points that you can really trust, right? So I'm a little worried about that. I also don't know where she went to undergraduate. Was it in the US? Was it somewhere else? Obviously a 3.7 is great. If, you know, there are many scenarios under which, like, for example, let's imagine this person has worked for all of her 4 years at a Big Four consulting firm and has simultaneously been consulting to the family business, and that she graduated from Princeton with a 3.7 in, you know, I don't know, economics or something, right? So suddenly it's like, okay, you know, things are starting to come into really clear view, and maybe 7.10 is okay, you know? But if I, you know, it's sort of like, if someone tells me that it might rain, well, I take the raincoat, you know, if I can prepare in advance. And so if someone tells me like my odds would be better with a 730 or a 750 than with a 710 at Harvard and Stanford, I would probably go and take the test again. I also think she's unique enough where applying in round one versus two, I'm not so sure that matters. You know, she didn't tell us what Asian country the family business is located in and presumably her like where she's from originally or her heritage. So it's hard for us to know, like, is she overrepresented or not? But my view is her profile seems unique enough where I don't think she's going to be overrepresented, even if she is from a country that has a lot of candidates to business school. So I kind of lean towards retaking just to, because, I mean, if she thinks she can get a better score, it's just going to increase her odds of getting into these top schools.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think the simple point is a 740 better than a 710? Right. I mean, yes. The answer is always going to be yes, no matter who you are.
Right.
And, you know, for some candidates, that increase is going to have no impact. You're still getting in at the 710. That's fine. But for the majority of candidates, that increase of 30 points is going to have some marginal impact. And when you're targeting Harvard and Stanford, I mean, if you're going, I mean, you, I guess, and we've talked about this before in the podcast, Graham, when you apply, every element of your application needs to be as strong as it can be. If there is an element that you think can be improved and you have the wherewithal to be able to improve it, why would you not take that step?
Right.
The only counterpoint to that is it important or critical for you to be in the round one? And you've talked about this. Is she from an overrepresented pool? Probably not. And so on and so forth. Now, this becomes a bit of a moot point. Harvard's round one deadline has passed.
Right.
And I forget whether she applied to Harvard or she's waiting Harvard in round two and applying to Stanford in round one. She was sort of thinking of splitting them up. But the point is, if you think that you can get a 30-point improve, and you're fairly sure you're going to get a 30-point improve, you should go ahead and get that 30-point improve. If you think, wow, I'm going to have to work really, really hard and I'm still running the risk that I'm not going to improve the score because I think I did, that this is at my best, then it's like, then go ahead and submit it.
Yeah. I mean, just to be clear, so she is applying to Stanford in round one and Harvard in round two, or she's wondering if she should apply to Stanford. And my view is, I don't see the rush. I mean, if she thinks she could have a better score, you know, in a pinch, she could apply and indicate that she's already has a retake on the calendar, and I'll notify the committee once she has that score too. But that has risks too. The other thing I wanted to debunk is someone commented on the site, and it's actually, they gave a great comment overall, but there was one piece of their comment that I wanted to just disagree with. And that was that because she wants to go into the family business, the GMAT score doesn't matter as much. Mm. And the idea that the person was positing was basically that, you know, the school knows you have a place to land post MBA, so they're not going to be as worried about your numbers. But I don't think that's actually true, and it's certainly not true at the very top of the heap here, where, you know, we're talking about Harvard, Stanford, etc. So I don't think those two things have any relation to one another. I do think a school, you know, does like to see a candidate that has a kind of very clear path to a career, and even is sponsored or has a guaranteed job. There's nothing wrong with that. That's always a feather in your cap, right? But I don't think it somehow discounts a GMAT score. I think it fits in another category. So in any event, I mean, I think this person, you know, presumably they, as I said earlier, they may have a lot to offer. Sounds like they could have some pretty great experience, and you know, then they have this, as you said, potential for really big impact type work down the road. If this is a large tech company in Asia that's growing, and this person could be a leader. So, I like the candidacy. I just worry that the score is a little light for me at this point. And I'd love to know the breakdown too.
Yeah, if it's Alibaba, then sounds like they've got a great opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, so anyway, appreciate that person, her sharing her profile. And obviously, you know, when you're featured on the podcast, you can always follow up with comments on the ApplyWire post, and we'll continue the dialogue if that's of interest, or if people want to fill in some of the blanks. And as I said, we're hoping to have some actual candidates on the show as we get into the fall here, where we can talk through and get these questions answered in real time. So stay tuned for that. And that's it for this week. I'm looking forward to another episode next week. And in the meantime, please sign up and join us this Wednesday for the essay workshop with UT Austin, Chicago Booth, NYU Stern, and MIT Sloan. That's going to be a lot of fun. And yeah, Alex, thanks as always for picking out these entries. And I guess we'll see you in 1 week's time.
Very good. Good luck, everyone, and stay safe.